Gary Rudoran joins me today, and I think, first of all, we should just, you know, establish your bona fides. Are you now, or have you ever been officially a member of the Bartlet administration?
I have not. My resume apparently got lost somewhere.
Ah.
But I would have been.
And were you ever involved with the West Wing at all, the TV show?
If by involved you mean did I watch it every week religiously, then yes, I was involved.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 286, The West Wing. Every so often, my Twitter feed will explode with questions from people who are rewatching The West Wing or only discovering it now via streaming or repeats or on DVD. And they've seen me on the 13th episode called He Shall from Time to Time from the first season, and they ask, well, how was that? When was that? What was it like working with Richard Schiff? Did you meet Aaron Sorkin? Etc., etc. Well, as it happens, my old friend Gary Rudoran, who's an actor and director and the co-author of Comedy by the Numbers, The 169 Secrets of Humor and Popularity. It turns out Gary is a West Wing nerd and knows lines, plots, characters, and details from the entire series. So I thought talking to him would be a good way to celebrate a series we were both fans of and answer any questions folks might have about my tiny involvement in it.
Well, let me just say, your episode, and I was one of those people who was lying on the couch watching the episode and then bolted upright and said, Austin Titchener's on the show. And was so excited for you, and I'm sure I emailed right after. And you were in kind of a semi, one of the, in a way, almost like a classic scene that had some funny in it. It had like the Norm Crosby-esque Arthur Miller dance company reference, just to show how stupid and illiterate culturally the senators were. But, you know, but also a serious topic, and also one of the great sort of Toby confrontational scenes, because they just drew such a great distinction with him as being this flawed political animal who fought for the underdog. You know, you think about the great Christmas episode where he went and his coat was found on a dead homeless veteran, and who he had no connection to other than the guy had his coat, and he's like a pit bull.
Yeah.
Not the Sarah Palin kind of pit bull, but an actual pit bull who gets something that tugs at him in his craw. He won't let go of it.
And he's
that's right.
And he's not attractive, and he's hard to love because he's all edges. He's all sharp edges, and he's not warm and cuddly. He's just, but he's in there fighting the good fight. It was. For me, it was just too much fun because, A, I got to sit in the Roosevelt Room on the set of The West Wing and you know, for a day shooting those scenes with Richard Schiff, who's a phenomenal actor, and, you know, but also, and a nice guy, but not like an effusive actor type. Brad Whitford is an effusive actor type, who gives everybody big hugs and welcomes everybody. And Richard,
yeah, he seems like a guy that's always on.
Yes, and Richard is rarely on. But I was, the first thing I was able to say to him was, you know, dude, I loved you in Jurassic Park 2. You were the only guy whose death I actually cared about. And he told me a great story. He said, we were sitting there all day, and he said, you know, I was originally supposed to live in that movie, but I looked around, I saw how things were going, and I realized I didn't want to spend another 5 weeks in Hawaii fighting for screen time with Vince Vaughn. So please kill me now. But his character was so good, and his character was so warm in a way that Toby was not. And, you know, that episode was also the first episode where President Bartlet gave his first State of the Union speech in the episodes of The West Wing. It was also the first episode where he collapsed from his
end. Right, you start to, that's absolutely correct. And what that, of course, made me wonder is exactly, I would have been loved to have been on the fly on the wall when Aaron Sorkin is charting out this show.
Right.
Because you know, he drops things in, like that collapse, and then you just don't know.
Right.
You don't know what that's all about yet. And then pays it off, you know, years later,
because it's a storyline that just keeps giving and giving. Well, and originally President Bartlet was not supposed to be such a regular appearance on the show, but he came in so strong with one of the greatest entrances in theatrical or film history.
Absolutely, the greatest.
And then
shall worship me. What is it?
You shall worship no other god but me. Yeah,
but me. Yes, full double door opening, arms astretch, bravado. Yeah, brilliant.
Well, and the thing I loved about it was that it's of any TV show I've ever watched and been a fan of, it's the show that hit the ground running. It knew what it wanted to be from sort of the very first moments of the first episode. You know, so it was thrilling. Actually, I got to L.A. at just the perfect time, in sort of the late 90s, and I finally got an agent after doing three episodes of The Practice, and my new agent called John Levy, who was the casting director for ER, and they were doing this new show about the White House. So I went in, and I read for the pilot, and I didn't get it. And then I went in again to audition to play the guy who was deposing Josh Lyman for something, and I didn't get that. And then finally I got this part for in that episode, He Shall From Time to Time. But you read the sample of the script, and I went, oh my God, this is amazing. And then by then it was already on the air, and I went, oh, I so want to be a part of this.
Another little piece of trivia is that, and I believe I'd have to really look up at IMDb or something, but I believe the very first words of the pilot are spoken by a great Chicago actor, a guy named Mark Grapey, who is in the bar talking to Sam, saying, you know, so is Josh Lyman going to get fired? And what I love, look, there's great burden on pilot episodes to both introduce characters and introduce themes and so forth.
Right.
And so many pilots make the mistake of saying, well, I'm certainly glad that I'm here, especially since I'm a 45-year-old ex-alcoholic reporter who's standing at a bar, and, you know, just sort of exposition land. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they kind of lead you into the structure of these characters and don't make it – they assume that you're kind of catching up.
Yeah.
You know, they've been leading this life, and they're sort of catching up. It was great structurally. It kept your interest. I honestly didn't even know if you were going to see the president early on. As I recall reading, I mean, Rob Lowe was supposed to be the sort of focus of the whole show.
Mm-hmm, he was,
which,
yeah.
Which, you know, to his credit, he obviously, and he left after a while, but he was great and really the conscience in so many parts of the conscience of the show.
Right.
But, you know, the fact that they expanded and you got to know a real president and, you think about the work relationships there. You know, these people, some of them didn't know each other that well. So in the beginning, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam and Toby didn't know each other until Josh brought them together, right?
I think, yes, that's right. Josh brought Sam in. That's right.
Josh brought Sam in.
Right.
And Leo brought Toby in.
Leo brought Toby in, and of course, Leo was behind President Bartlet running, and then Sam was new to everybody, because I remember Bartlet and his wife, she was saying, Sam said something, and he went, which one is Sam, in a flashback, and she says, the young one. He goes, they're all young. Well, and Brad Whitford just said something in an interview about the movie Cabin in the Woods, which I really liked, but he said something that I totally agree with. He said, you know, Joss Whedon, who wrote Cabin in the Woods, and Aaron Sorkin, the creator and writer of West Wing, are both writers who assume that their audience is as intelligent as they are. So they write the scripts to the top of their intelligence. They absolutely don't dumb it down. And it's one of the things that was disappointing as the West Wing went on in later years, as they tried to find their footing without Aaron Sorkin, is that they did seem to sort of dumb it down and make it more about romantic relationships, less about policy ideas. But they still managed to keep it kind of smart. And as you go towards the end of the season, so much of the campaign I mean, it's funny. I did one episode of it, but I'm a fan of it just as much. So much of the campaign of who became President Santos eerily predicted the campaign of Obama and mirrored it.
And I think that season reinvigorated the show in general. Mm-hmm. My wife was a political reporter, covered the 2004 campaign. I got a little taste of being on the road with her sometimes, covering John Kerry and so forth. And it is manic. I mean, it is crazy. And she thought that they really got it right in so many ways, just from the energy. But you could just tell even the style, the decisions, even the sort of shallowness of it being frustrating to these guys. And I'll tell you the other brilliance of that, not only Obama, i.e. Jimmy Smith, but, you know, McCain, in a way, was a different kind of, Arnie Vinnick was a different kind of Republican. So they didn't just set up a good guy, bad guy thing. They made the quote-unquote bad guy, Arnie Vinnick, a good guy, too.
Yeah.
Had a lot of virtues. That, I thought, was the genius of the entire season.
Yeah.
Actor like Alan Alda, who plays everything so well, and a character that was not a cookie cutter.
And an improvement over the James Brolin Republican candidate, who was just sort of a straw dog set up 4 years before, which is when I think the West Wing was sort of at its height of a liberal fantasy, certainly my liberal fantasy, of a candidate telling off a candidate like a George W. Bush exactly the way you want him to. I know that there was Republicans who called the show the Left Wing, because I don't think that's unfair. But what I do think was so great about the show, generally, is that it is a fantasy in that most of the politicians they depict seem to be in it for the right reasons. They want, on whatever side of the aisle you're on, they're in it to try to make their country better in the way they think it should. And the bad guys are the ones who are only in it for party politics or partisan or, you know, pork barrel projects. You know, those are the bad guys. But and so much of the interesting, smart drama of the show was finding conflict within all those kinds of high-minded and complicated ideas.
I'm Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, and a longtime fan of Malcolm Wilson, former lieutenant governor of New York, who, of course, as you well know, helped Nelson Rockefeller get elected governor in 1958 and served until 1973. And you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We are just weeks away from our 22-city 2012 tour of the UK, where we'll be performing The Complete World of Sports Abridged in York, Buxton, Exeter, Newbury, Nottingham, Truro, Poole, Tunbridge Wells, Peterborough, Canterbury, Norwich, Derby, Hereford, Rhyl, Barnsley, Salford, Basingstoke, Crawley, Bedford, Tewkesbury, and London, where we will be returning to the Arts Theatre for 6 weeks this summer. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And for a short time only, the Arts Theatre in London is selling a reduced number of tickets for the special London Olympics 2012 price of 2012.
You know, I mean, James Brolin playing the very obvious George Bush-esque candidate was, you know, it was oddly just too black and white.
Yeah.
But just for the debate episode, where they're trying to see if it's going to be, you know, the smart Bartlett or the Mr., you know, Uncle Fluffy.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that he pulls it out and shows how great it is to actually be smart, I feel like that's an Obama thing also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you feel like you want Obama to show that he's got not only a command of the English language, but a, you know, an overall big picture sense, as opposed to the narrow world that so many, the, in this case, the Republicans are going through. Think about what would happen in real life if Obama talked to Mitt Romney about states' rights and said something like, you know, you're Alaskans with your the poetry and
the Eskimo poetry, yeah.
The Eskimo poetry, and you know, Florida got over $30 billion from New Englanders and Texans and the Alaskans with their right with their Eskimo poetry, and you know, the question is, can we have it back?
Yeah,
because that's, you know, there are some times when we are one nation, and there are some times when we are 50 states. Aaron Sorkin just eats up the reality that he can control politics through this show, and you just see him savoring it. It's awesome. There are so many unanswered questions for me also, like whatever really happened to Mandy.
Thank goodness, though. She is not missed.
She's not really missed. She was the least believable. You just never got the backstory on her. You know, it was all a lot of talk, like,
right.
Mandy saved us during the, like, you, I don't even think you, we saw her in the, all the flashback episodes during In the Shadow of Two Gunmen.
Right.
You don't see Mandy during any of that buildup in the march through the primaries and the fight with Hoynes and so forth.
Right.
You don't get to see her. So the legend, you just don't get why the legend has built that Mandy is such a great operative.
Well, it seemed one of those issues where also I don't think it was well cast. I mean, nothing against the actress, but you know, not every actor is right for every part, and she didn't bring the same sort of weight and gravitas to her role that everybody else seemed to. And the part seemed not as interesting. The part seemed more formulaic than brand new. I mean, when I said I was lucky that I went out to LA in the late 90s, I did that episode of West Wing, where I played, I only found this out, I played a congressman. I thought I was a member of the Democratic National Committee, but there's some list on Wikipedia somewhere of the politicians in West Wing, and my name is on there as a congressman. Raymond something. Can't remember.
Raymond Burns.
Raymond, thank you. Raymond Burns. Okay. But I did pretty well in fictional TV administrations. I worked for the White House in the agency. I was the Secretary of the Treasury in 24. I was the Chief of Staff for the Speaker of the House in Mr. Sterling, which was sort of West Wing light. Yep. West Wing light created by Lawrence O'Donnell. West Wing light for the Providence audience. And I was the Chief of Staff for Senator Baines on Citizen Baines. Baines was played by James Cromwell. So I did pretty well for a while there in fictional Washington, D.C. presidential administration.
Wait, let me connect some dots there. James Cromwell played one of the ex-presidents.
That's right.
In an episode of The West Wing. I believe I want to call it The Stormy Present.
Right.
But and he had a dog. And then Josh Brolin, who played Mr. Sterling, his dad played the bumbling Republican candidate in a few episodes against...
That's right. Mr. Sterling was created by Lawrence O'Donnell, who was one of the writers on the West Wing, and also played President Bartlett's headmaster father.
And headmaster father, right.
And is now a talking head on MSNBC. And the production design... I'm not going to know this exactly right, but the production of design of Mr. Sterling was done by a man named Dirksen, whose father was a senator, and after whom
Everett Dirksen.
That's right. That's right.
There's a building named after him in Chicago, and I used to be an architect in Chicago. There, it has come full circle.
Ba-boom.
It actually proves that you are the link between all of these things.
I am.
You're the Kevin Bacon of day players.
Yes. We'll be right back.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us any further questions you have about my involvement in the West Wing via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner and find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Deputy Press Secretary Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to M. Sierra Garcia. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Ken Rudin from National Public Radio. Check out his Political Junkie column at npr.org. And thanks to Gary Rudoran. Look for his book, Comedy by the Numbers, the 169 Secrets of Humor and Popularity, at your favorite online or brick-and-mortar bookseller. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 286 858ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.